Chapter 2. From Eden to Babylon. And the Lord God planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed. Genesis 2, verse 8. In this chapter, we'll explore humanity's early journey from the idyllic environment of the Garden of Eden across two millennia to urbanized life in the city of Babylon. The book of Genesis can be divided into two sections, chapters 1 through chapter 11, verse 9, and chapter 11, verse 10 through chapter 50, all structured around the Hebrew toledot, meaning generation or history. The word appears in the headings to 11 distinct accounts within the book. The first begins, "This is the history, toledot, of the heavens and the earth when they were created," Genesis 2, verse 4. Another way to say it would be, "This is what happened to the heavens and the earth after they were created." A history of outcomes for the heavens and the earth ensues, followed by outcomes for individuals as their generations are recorded. In the case of the creation of the heavens and the earth, what happened is explained through to Genesis 4, verse 26, when the next toledot marker appears. It includes a glance at the intervening chaos recorded in Genesis 1 and verse 2, and the familiar story of the 6 days of creation, including the coming of humanity, chapter 1, verses 3 through 31. The next developments are the entry of evil and sin into the renewed world, the expulsion of Adam and Eve from Eden, and the story of their violent son Cain and his descendants. In other words, the original creation that suffered desolation because of Satan's rebellion was renewed by God's creative acts in 6 days and was set on a new course through human beings with the capacity of free will. Their decision to move away from reliance on God to self-reliance was facilitated by Satan's deception. Once they listened to the deceiver's voice and acted, they embarked on a downward path toward chaos once more. Genesis chapters 2 and 3 explain in detail how this came about. First, let's explore how and why God created the first human beings. This is important to know, and Genesis is a book of origins, providing us with knowledge we would not otherwise gain. It teaches that humanity is not a cosmic accident. It is crucial to attend to the book's revelation if we are to live in this world with understanding of our purpose and destiny. As we noted in chapter 1, God created the first human beings unique among living things. Genesis 2 zooms in on the sixth day, retelling in greater detail the creation of man and woman. When God created humans, they were defined in terms of relationships. It was not good that man should be alone. God's view was that he needed someone equal and complementary to him. Thus, the first humans were made male and female, and whole as a couple. So God created man, humankind, in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 27. Their uniqueness among other living creatures rested on their being made in the image of God. And they were also to have a right relationship with their Creator, attending to his words and teaching, especially when it came to how they were to acquire knowledge. The expanded account of the creation of male and female humankind shows that the man was made from elements of the earth. In Hebrew, adama, ground, land. The woman was created second, being constituted from part of the man. She shall be called woman, isha, because she was taken out of man, ish. Genesis 2, verse 23. Once again, their close and dependent relationship is emphasized. We are male and female, and physical and spiritual in composition. The physical part of us comes from the dust of the earth, and the Lord God formed man of the dust, apar, loose earth, humus, soil, of the ground. The non-material animating spirit comes from God, who breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being, nephesh, Genesis chapter 2, verse 7. At death, the physical returns to earth. For dust you are, and to dust you shall return. Genesis 3:19. See also Ecclesiastes 12, verse 7a. As for the inanimate part, the spirit will return to God who gave it. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 7b. And await resurrection. These first humans were to multiply on the earth and subdue it. Further, they were to have dominion over every living thing that moves on the earth. Genesis 1:28. The Hebrew words used here signify bringing under control, kabash, and ruling over, rada. That's to say, humanity was intended to become the leader of all that God created. These Hebrew words have been used to justify all kinds of environmental abuse, yet teaching elsewhere in the Bible does not allow for a despoliation of the creation. A central aspect of Genesis 2 is God's instruction to eat from the trees in the garden, including the tree of life, verse 9, but with the exception of one in particular. And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, "Of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die," verses 16 and 17. As is well known, eating the fruit of this tree led to many difficulties for humanity. Probably not an apple as commonly pictured, this unidentified fruit is a symbol of the human pursuit of knowledge without involving God. This becomes clear in Genesis 3, when first Eve and then Adam chooses to disregard God's instruction about what to take in as mental and spiritual nourishment and what to avoid, that is, symbolically, how to be sure of the right way to live. Existing before the creation of humankind was God's archenemy, Satan. As already noted, he had been present on the earth as its good guardian, Halel, day star, before his rebellion against God and the resulting reduction to chaos. Once Adam and Eve were created, Satan set about subverting God's plan for them. He came to the garden and spoke to Eve, casting doubt on God's words about the dangers of eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. His method was to deceive by presenting the fruit of the forbidden tree as good for eating, appealing to look at, and a source of godlike wisdom, Genesis 3 and verse 6. Once Eve entertained his argument, she took the fruit and ate it, dismissing God's warning that it would lead to eventual death. She then gave some of the fruit to her husband, and he took it, knowing full well that he was disobeying God. This wrong way of acquiring knowledge of good and evil was the problem they set in motion for humanity. Instead of relying on God's guidance and direction in discovering right knowledge by His revelation and teaching, they launched out on seeking knowledge only through the human senses and mind. They took to themselves knowledge production, devoid of God's influence. What they did was to give themselves the right to determine what was right and wrong, rather than accept God's definition. This has led human beings on the wrong path ever since. Only when we come into accord with the Creator's standard of right and wrong will we succeed. The immediate outcome of Adam and Eve's decision was to be driven from the garden, to live a difficult life cut off from access to the tree of life. So he drove out the man, and he placed cherubim at the east of the Garden of Eden, and a flaming sword which turned every way to guard the way to the tree of life, verse 24. The story of Adam and Eve's life from this point on demonstrates the folly of leaving God out of the picture. One of the lasting outcomes of disobedience to God's way is humanity's proclivity to resolve conflicts through violence. In the case of the first human murder, it was Adam and Eve's son Cain, a young man who showed great antagonism towards Abel, his brother. Abel had a right relationship with God, and this spurred Cain to violence. The Apostle John writes, "Why did he murder him? Because his works were evil, and his brothers righteous. 1 John 3 and verse 12. When the brothers came to make an offering to God, Abel's was accepted and Cain's was not. Angry at God's favor toward his brother, Cain was unable and unwilling to curb his sense of inferiority and his belligerent attitude and gave in to the urge to strike out and kill his brother. It was not that he did not know the right way. God had said to him, "If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it." Genesis 4 and verse 7. The outcome for Cain was banishment to the life of a fugitive and a vagabond. He said that God's decision to cut him off from contact was greater than he could bear, verses 13 and 14. The outcome for Cain's immediate descendants was the building of Enoch, the first city mentioned in the Bible, named after Cain's son. City life was perhaps an attempt to resolve the sentence of wandering, Cain's answer to God's rejection. Another outcome was the perpetuation of murder as a means of settling problems. Cain's descendant Lamech, the first recorded polygamist, boasted, "I have killed a young man in retaliation," verse 23, "and he seemed to fear none in return," verse 24. Other firsts among Cain's offspring include the introduction of animal breeding, music, and metalwork, verses 20 through 22. It may be that Cain and his descendants were not well-intentioned regarding these aspects of civilization, and the results were corrupted. The New Testament writer Jude writes about ungodly men who follow the way of Cain, Jude verses 4 and 11. The first century Jewish historian Josephus notes, "Cain was not only very wicked in other respects, but was wholly intent upon getting, and he first contrived to plow the ground." He comments that Cain's offering to God was not accepted because it was the invention of a covetous man and gotten by forcing the ground, Antiquities of the Jews. It would not be inconsistent that Cain's descendants would engage in the wrong use of cultural innovations. And if they did, aspects of them have most likely come down to us today. Old Testament scholar Derek Kidner writes in his commentary on Genesis, "Cain's family is a microcosm. Its pattern of technical prowess and moral failure is that of humanity." Of course, animal husbandry, music, and metallurgy are not problematic in themselves. After all, there are many examples of their use by people of God in the service of God. Adam and Eve had a third son, Seth, from whose line good emerged. Eve considered Seth a gift from God to replace the murdered Abel, Genesis 4 and verse 25. In the days of Seth's son, Enosh, some people began to turn toward God, verse 26, perhaps indicating his positive influence. This brief introduction to the line of Seth sets the stage for the listing of the Book of the Genealogy or Toledot of Adam as it continued through that son. It seems that a written record of some form, perhaps a clay tablet, existed of Adam's descendants. This line includes, in contrast to Cain's line, the seventh generation Enoch, a man who walked with God, Genesis 5, verses 22 and 24, and Noah, builder of the ark, a just man, perfect in his generations, a man of integrity among his contemporaries, Genesis 6 and verse 9, and a preacher of righteousness, 2 Peter 2 and verse 5. The downward slide of humanity set in motion by Adam and Eve's disobedience and Cain's rejection of God began to come to a head in Noah's time. God expressed regret that he'd made humankind, Genesis 6 and verse 7, and told Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth," verse 13. This was because evil had become standard practice. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Verse 5. And so the earth was subject to destruction by flood. A great flood is attested in the histories of many peoples. According to the Genesis account, see Genesis chapter 6, verse 1 through chapter 9, verse 19, God instructed Noah to build a 450-foot by 75-foot by 45-foot ark to preserve human and animal life. A distinction was drawn between the seven pairs of clean birds and animals and the one pair of unclean to be preserved. Only Noah, together with his immediate family of seven people, his wife and his three sons and their wives, and the non-human life they protected, survived the flood. By the time the waters receded enough for them to leave the ark, more than a year had passed. One of Noah's first acts, once outside the boat, was to build an altar in thanksgiving and make an offering from every clean species of bird and animal. God then promised never to destroy all life again, as he had done by flood, saying that the rainbow would always remind him of his commitment. The nations that sprang from this new beginning are recorded in Genesis chapter 10. There is no other such record in ancient history. This is the Toledot of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, a table of nations recording the beginning of 70 ancient lands and societies, including Crete, Rhodes, Cyprus, Libya, Egypt, Ethiopia, Arabia, Assyria, and Babylonia. This section through Genesis chapter 11, verse 9, includes specific information about the development of city life in Babylon. One of Ham's grandsons, Nimrod, possibly from the Hebrew marad, rebel or rebellious, became a legendary hero, of whom it was proverbially said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter in defiance of God. His kingdom included Babel, Babylon, and other cities of Babylonia. See Genesis chapter 10, verses 8 through 10. In keeping with the origins theme of Genesis, the chapter also mentions that the city-oriented culture around Nimrod and Babylon gave rise to others. For example, the great Assyrian capital of Nineveh, verse 11. This violent and defiant development, so soon after the flood, would lead to the arrogance displayed at the building of the Tower of Babel.